to do. Now you know this is the end. You're wondering now what to do. Now you know this is the end.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
El show de Leo Ramírez, lunes 4 a 5 de la tarde en el 101.9 FM, CITR. The Leo Ramírez Show, Monday, 4 to 5 p.m. at 101.9 FM, CITR.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts at citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Whoever said money can't buy you friends obviously wasn't a member at CITR. When you become a member, you get the Friends of CITR card with incredible discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to citr.ca.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
Beautiful country. You know, I rode out here about 50 years ago on a little dun horse and started a film career. A picture called The Big Trail. Well, I made quite a few since then. Some good, some bad. Matter of fact, in those days,
CITR!
Matter of fact, they come in pretty handy anytime. It's kind of nice to know you have something set aside. So if you ever figure, remember that
CITR
can be mighty helpful. Yeah!
bottom land. Underneath the deep, deep blue, burning in the sand. Yeah, 'cause I can't get home. No, I can't get home. So I try to recover something familiar to me, like a certain color, or like a souvenir to keep. But I can't get home. No, I can't get home. So never before did far away ever charge so close to me, so close to me. I was walking around because I had no place to be, and then you call my name. You're always calling after me, so I hide in the high, high grounds. Everybody's looking for me. I'm so hard to catch, even though I'm never out of reach. But you, you can't get home. No, you can't get home.
Stage. You stood there so tall like a cedar. I was standing in your shadow. Someone so hard and needed your shade. I heard no, but it wasn't you or me who did the talking when I looked at you like I did then.
If I could save time in a bottle, first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time with. If I had a box just for wishes and dreams that had never come true, the box would be empty except for the memory of how they were answered by you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. Looked around enough to know you're the one I want to go through time.
Good Monday morning. Nice sunny day. Kaunsunga hinudikya ang. In Haida I'm called Kaunsunga. Tetlana's hat, I owe the aging. I'm of the two-headed eagle crest in Haida. Gats akas diok alakn. Our population is divided into two parts, and I'm of the eagle half of it, and the other people are raven. Dr. Woodrow Morrison, B.A.J.D., Hinu Diya Ajhat, I Kiltke Ang. In English, my name is Woodrow. Well, I didn't get an email, so either nobody's listening or nobody disagrees. So anyway, something I've been, you know, sort of been on my mind is I saw in a paper the other day the question, are we ready for another million people in Vancouver? And then I look in the Thursday, May 28th paper, talks about the Blue Dot movement gains momentum. And when I hear things like that, I ask myself, who benefits for more people, from having more people? When you take a look at demographics, as they begin to change, as the population begins to increase, when it hits a certain level over, say, a five-year period, your social services begin to break down. You don't have enough police protection, you don't have enough fire protection, your classrooms, you don't have enough of those, you don't have enough hospital beds, you don't have enough private or family doctors. You start losing all sorts of things. And the one thing that disturbs me so much, now that the Lululemon initiative that bought a bicycle path on Point Grey Road, with all the other traffic now on 4th Avenue and on Broadway, and I live right between the two of them, now we don't have any bees. And I personally think, and it's not no scientific thing, just my impression after having lived for over 70 years and watched things, is that the auto emissions are killing the bugs. We don't have any house flies. We don't have any mosquitoes. We don't have any bees. Very few birds. So something is going haywire. And when you bring in a million more people, where are you going to put them? You know, they joke about Vancouver and call it Hongcouver because Hong Kong didn't have any more space on the ground, so they start pushing up higher and higher, and that's what we're doing here. So who benefits? Well, obviously you and I, as citizens and voters, don't benefit. And I think one of the things that was done to us, and we play right into it too, because we use the same terminology. We have stopped being citizens. We have stopped being voters. We have become taxpayers. Corporations are taxpayers. Corporations don't breathe the air. Corporations don't drink the water. When oil gets spilled, they get paid to clean it up. A corporation does not exist. No one has ever seen one. It's a ghost. It's a contrivance on paper. And there's one of the things that's happened here in Canada is that a corporation is designed to protect the assets of the owner, not to protect the asses of the people in there. And so we've gotten to a point now where we have to actually back up and ask, what is the function of government? Governments were designed to protect us against feudalism, to protect us against those big guys. We can't protect ourselves. I can't go and spend $10 million and give it to the city to build me a bicycle path to keep cars away from my front door. I can't do that. And then I get watered down to the point where I'm not even a voter anymore. I'm not even a citizen. I'm simply a taxpayer. And the amount of taxes I pay, probably in proportion to my income, is vastly greater than that of Lululemon, whatever they pay in taxes here. And when you take a look at that, it's getting to the point now where people who are consumers, people who will buy things from stores, can't afford to do it because the prices don't go up, they keep devaluing the dollar so that its spending power is less and less. I can remember when the value of the dollar was such that I could buy a hamburger for 19 cents. I could buy a cup of coffee for a nickel. The purchasing power of the dollar is going down. And we've tied it directly to the cookie jar. To me, it's a cookie jar mentality. Every time our economy slows down, we go to the cookie jar and start ripping more, it's called resources, from the earth. For us Haidas and for other people, or indigenous people or tribal people, I'll put it that way, those are not resources, those are our relatives. And so we have a responsibility to protect them and not to waste them, not to just throw them around. So when we look at that, we ask again, who's benefiting from this? The whole notion of a global economy is destroying all the small businesses. Say you have a bad year for apples in Okanagan. Used to be when you had a little bit of scarcity, you raise the price and you cover your losses. You can't do that now, because you're competing against global multinational corporations. They have enough product to where they don't have to raise their prices. You raise your price, you go under, because you can't compete with those lower prices. And that's really what it's all about. It's time for us to start taking back our power as voters, as citizens, as being protected by the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. A corporation is a person for only limited purposes, and that's to own and alienate property. It's not to usurp the rights of living, breathing citizens and voters. So when we take a look at what are we going to do with another million people, who's going to benefit? We don't have enough bridges. And you say you got to build a subway, a ground or ground. Well, we've destroyed almost all of the salmon streams already. So you might as well finish the job by tunneling underneath and absolutely destroying what little is left. And you call that progress. Well, you can call running over the cliff as lemmings could be progress too. Except the thing with the lemmings is a false. It was created by Walt Disney. There was a movie many years ago. I remember seeing it, some sort of a National Geographic type thing, in which these lemmings were rushing headlong over a cliff into the ocean. And those lemmings falling into the ocean were being poured out of buckets on a bridge in Edmonton. Here they're pouring living animals out of buckets off a bridge to give the impression that these lemmings were committing suicide. So we start believing all this stuff. I worked in the movies long enough to know that if it's on screen, don't believe it. I worked on The X-Files for 3 years. And, well, actually, I worked on one episode in the first season as a cultural consultant on a story that was being filmed on a Blackfeet reservation in Montana. At least it was set there, but was filmed here in Bordertown. But being around the set and watching how things were done, watching that director of photography, these people were real magicians. And to me, movies are magic. So to me, we were making magic. And I would watch how they would use shadows and light to create impressions of things that weren't quite real, but your mind would magnify it and make it more real. And so when we start doing things like that, take a look at a movie called Wag the Dog. I don't know if any of you have ever seen it, but this is where the whole thing that happened over in Iraq with the U.S. invading over there was all manufactured. It was all manufactured on movie sets. They had screenwriters to write up the scripts and stuff for all this stuff to happen. So instead of the dog wagging the tail was wagging the dog. And so when we take a look at all this stuff, we want all this oil stuff here. Well, I would invite the rest of you who want to do this, go to Alberta. Go out on those oil fields and see what it smells like. I used to live in Alberta. I lived in Lethbridge, and then I moved to Calgary. My wife was teaching at university, and I worked in Edmonton. And so the sour gas wells and respites, sometimes they get the sour gas, and that gas would kill cattle and other things. And if that's what you want, the rest of us want something different. We want fresh air. We want clean, drinkable water. We want healthy food that's not contaminated with petroleum. And so my vote should carry as much weight as the billions of dollars Lululemon has to affect the outcome of a vote. And so the function of government is to provide for the general welfare of the voting population. Not only the voters, but our children too. And when we talk about welfare, we're talking about the well-being. And yet that's become a bad and a term used to denigrate people who have less. But we don't look at subsidies, millions and billions of dollars of subsidy are legally welfare, as defined legally, as a legal definition. Any payment of government coming directly, any payment of money coming directly from government is welfare. And so who are the greatest welfare recipients? It isn't us. You take a look at these big corporations. What do they need all these subsidies for? They're already making more money than they can ever spend. Here's what I see is going to happen. We're going to be destroying all the mom-and-pop shops. I live here in Kitsilano, and I go up and down the street walking, riding, driving, riding my bike, between McDonald's and Alma. And I've watched the businesses disappear. They used to be primarily Greek, but now I think there's maybe one, maybe two Greek restaurants left. A bakery, and I think two delis. All the rest are gone. And even one of the drugstores that I used to shop at, I'd go in there quite often, they've closed up and moved across the street to probably the most unfriendly building I've ever been in. They don't have the products that they had in the old place. This one is closed. It's not, you don't have a feeling of being in a friendly space. At least for me, I'm not going back there. I think I'll go somewhere else rather than to that place. And when you go through these places, the young people have never experienced really what we call freedom, the freedom that we were growing up with. See, I grew up in a Haida village on the Alaska side of the border, and we didn't have the residential schools like Canada. So we were permitted to be children. Oh yes, we had day schools where they beat the snot out of us. Well, I tell people to beat the Jesus out of me, because... But anyway, in the village, we knew who our relatives were. We have a whole clan system. So my mother was one of 12 women that I called mother, the O, because they're the same generation, they're the same crest, the two-headed eagle. And the children of those 12 women were my brothers and sisters. And the brothers of those women were all my uncles. See, my father's from the raven side, we're from the eagle side, so I'm not really related to my father. We call Tui. But we're so closely related, we can joke with each other real hard and we can't get mad. So my father and his brothers, I call all of them father. And the sisters of my father and his brothers, that's my aunt, Dishkan. And she had certain responsibilities, like our marriages were arranged. And so that aunt would be the one who would negotiate to whatever the agreement was to be for me to receive a gift called a wife. So the relationship there, everybody knew where they fit. Everybody had a place. And if I was in somebody else's house and it got late, I would just sleep there. If it was time to eat and I happened to be there, I'd sit down and eat. So we had a social safety net that protected everybody. And the only ones we had to look out for were the people at the school, because they were really, some of them were quite mean. And so when you grow up with a sense of freedom like that, we kids played, we stomped in puddles, and today's parents won't let the kids do that. We climbed trees, we fell down, we got hurt. Sometimes you got a broken bone, skinned and scraped. But as kids, we boys and girls played together. We had to learn from the women. That's where we were around the women all the time. They're berry picking. We kids would go and work with them on cleaning the berries. They bring in seaweed. We'd help the women drying it. They bring in fish. We'd help the women with the drying. And then as we get a little older, then we start spending time with the men, boys and girls. And we start learning the same things about skinning a deer, dressing a fish, whatever. But we all learn together. In wintertime, we swim in ice-cold water. Because if you fall overboard in wintertime, it doesn't matter what your gender is. You got to know how to survive. So we all were growing up together, and the whole thing about gender was no issue until the girls began to reach puberty. Then there's some very definite physical changes occur, but for the boys, it's not quite as obvious. So our training began to take on a different aspect to it from the women. But yet we grew up together that way, and then when they sent us away to school, then we couldn't talk to each other anymore. I don't remember really ever talking to my sisters, maybe once or twice in the 3 years. See, my first year of high school, my mother was Cherokee from Oklahoma, and she was adopted by my grandfather and her brothers into a Haida clan so that we would all be of the right crest. But anyway, my mother didn't want to have to send me away to school, so I went to my grandparents, and I spent a year with them in Southern California. My grandfather and grandmother lived up in the mountains, the San Gorgonio Mountains, where my grandfather worked on an apple orchard, a place called Los Rios Rancho, and my grandmother was a cook at the one-room schoolhouse that went up through grade 8, and then I would go down to the valley to Yucaipa, the junior high school. So my first year of high school was spent with my Cherokee relatives. And I was very, very fortunate in being able to spend that year with my grandparents. My grandfather had been a cowboy and all sorts of things, you know. And so I had the opportunity to spend that year with him. And there were other grandchildren, but I was the one that really had access to my grandfather and my grandmother. Then the following year, I was sent to a Presbyterian school. And my sister, a year younger than me, she was sent. Then the following year, the second sister, the three of us went there. And I was in trouble so much, they just told me I couldn't come back. They kicked me out. So we were sent to the government school, a place called Mount Edgecombe, across the channel from Sitka, Alaska. And so three of my younger sisters and I were at that school, and we all ended up graduating high school from there. But anyway, so it was a type of freedom that kids don't experience. You don't really have any idea what it's like to have that kind of freedom. And so we accept so little now. We accept BLC 51. We accept all those things without even raising an eyebrow. Yet there are other people who are trying to stop it, like this Blue Dot movement. Why is Canada so opposed to human rights? I don't understand. When you go to find a lawyer to sue for some civil rights, there's no money there. You need legal counsel, there's no money there. You get the United Nations as made this proclamation, I guess you might call it, of the rights and of the rights of indigenous peoples. And the Harper government is opposed to the word peoples. Want to leave it as population, because we were not an identifiable group of humans. We had no political existence. But it was adopted, and Canada won't honor it. The Jay Treaty, which ended the War of 1812 that he's been wanting so badly to tout out Canada's war record. He wants to be known as a war leader. But the War of 1812 was ended with a peace treaty. And in that treaty, by reference, words that ended the American Revolution, the treaty that was entered into then, set the 49th parallel as a boundary between this new nation and British Canada. And in there was language that said that this was a boundary, it wasn't a line to impede the free movement or trade and intercourse of the indigenous peoples of those regions. And so that same language was put into the Jay Treaty by reference. And yet, I'm from Heidelberg, Alaska, right on, just on the border, fairly close to Prince Rupert, B.C. I have a cousin down in Seattle. He came up, they were going to come to do some shopping on Granville Island for some art supplies. Got to the border and he would refuse them entry because in 1975, what's that, 35 years ago, something like that? 1975, no, that's 25, 35, 40 years ago. He was charged with impeding a police officer, something like that. And so for that reason, he couldn't come into Canada. He's Haida, he's native. Another cousin wanted to go to the all-native basketball tournament in Prince Rupert, but he couldn't come in because he got a speeding ticket in 1967. And so that's what Canada does to native people. And so it's not just cultural genocide. You take a look at how many native people are in prison. And also, the First Nations people get held longer when statutorily they can be released after two-thirds of their sentence. But they're held right up to the end. Whereas with the non-natives, they get out, but First Nations people don't. And when you go back to the beginning of this whole thing, it began with a statement, we have to destroy the tribal system and assimilate everyone. And so when it came up with the whole thing with the residential school, this is where they're going to beat the Indian out of the kid. And they did it to 150,000 kids. And thousands of them didn't ever survive. They never made it home. And so the system continues with keeping people in jail longer, putting them in jail younger. And often the only reason they can't get out is they can't pay the bail. In the States, while I was an undergraduate at the University of Alaska, I went to work for the court system as what was called a court bail investigator. There were two of us. And our job was to go into the jails and interview people that were detainees, or whatever you want to call them, prisoners, and find out how many of them were in there simply because they couldn't come up with the bail. And almost all of them were native people. And so this was being used as a form of punishment. They hadn't even been to trial yet, but they're on bail, and so they would be kept sometimes up to 6 months without ever gone to trial. So I would assume the same thing is going on here, given the practice of what's taking place with Native people. I work with the Vancouver Aboriginal Child and Family Services Society. I work there as an elder. I don't have anything to say about anything. I don't have anything to do with policy. Sometimes a social worker will refer a client to me, and mostly I just listen to them. But we hear these things, and you see these things. People terrified. And yet, Canada's the best place in the world to live. Canada is not a racist country. You know, the other day, one of our young people was walking his dog, and a elderly non-native person came along on a bicycle and yelled at him, called him a Jap. You know, Japs aren't very smart, because the guy was riding on a sidewalk and the young man didn't get out of his way in time. So you see these things, you hear these things, and it isn't a condemnation of people in Vancouver or people in general. It's saying we got a problem. Let's deal with it. When I first came to Vancouver in 1991, I commented something about there had been a couple of shootings. Well, we're not as bad as the Americans. So my question was, well, how bad do we have to get before we say we got a problem? Well, look how many were getting killed now, being shot. So how bad do we have to get before we stop saying we're not as bad as somebody else? Well, anyway, we got another song here we can make by Phyllis Sinclair. It's Morning Laughter, I think it is. So anyway, let's take a listen. It's, yeah, Morning Laughter.
Thank you. My name is David Scott. I play wide receiver for the University of British Columbia football team, and I'm here to discuss the Be More Than a Bystander program. Myself and a few other players were lucky enough to work alongside the BC Lions and EVA, the Ending Violence Association, to support this cause. The main goal of the Be More Than a Bystander initiative is to increase awareness of domestic violence against women. For more information on the cause, please visit endingviolence.org.
Well, we're back. Anyway, all the stuff you hear me talking about here, these are all my own opinions. I don't represent the station or anybody else. Something I saw on Facebook this morning really disturbed me. A young Haida man named Walker put on there that they found the remains of two giant green sea turtles on the shores in Haida Gwaii. And this is something rather extraordinary. We know those turtles come across from Hawaii. In fact, we call them Kanagas Kustan. Kanagas is what the Hawaiians call themselves, and Kustan is a crab, like a Dungeness crab. And that it has nothing to do with a crab being related to a turtle. It's just the way that the limbs move. And a frog is Jitgan Kustan, which is a bush crab because its legs move funny too. But anyway, those sea turtles, we used to see them from time to time on the Alaska side of the border, just across Dixon Entrance. It's only 23 miles across from the old village of Kaeani to the northwest corner of Haida Gwaii called Langara Island, or we call it Kiskwai. And so we would see those turtles along there, but they come from Hawaii. But anyway, to find them, the carcasses on the shore is a rather extraordinary thing. And we don't know why, what happened to them. And I don't know if there's enough of the remains left for marine biologists to find out. But we do know that something is changing, and it's changing very rapidly. The ocean currents are warming up. We've got currents running different way from the way they used to. In fact, I guess Haida Gwaii is sort of on a drought watch. That in Vancouver Island, stage three. We're listed at stage three. There's no snow on the mountains, so there's not going to be any runoff. There's none here. And so we get a million more people. What are we going to do? Where are we going to get the water from? We keep bragging about how we got so much water. People got to drink it. People got to frack with it. Quit fracking with our water. Bunch of fracking idiots. You know, when I was growing up, when the old men would be talking about something very serious, they'd always figure out a way to make a joke about something. So even when we talk about a very serious subject, we'd always finish with, and it was said in a joking way, "Die Art Lusuken." My spirit says so too. And so, see, when a person hears something funny or a joke, it says their mind is hot. That means now your mind is open. Your ego isn't getting in the way. Your religious convictions and all the other things don't get in the way when you're happy. And so your mind is open to receiving information. But when you're closed up, you've got tunnel vision and you're only learning what you're programming yourself to learn. Whereas with those old men, they say you travel far distances to learn something because now you have to be open to hearing everything. You don't have to believe a word of anything. You don't have to believe anything or even agree with it, but just hear it. Just hear it. Everything will have an effect on everything else. And so the most difficult thing for a human to do is to change their mind. We call that Gudengai Stichtung. Gudengai is my being. So it's not only what I'm thinking, it's why I behave also, that my behavior and my thinking have to be in sync. So to be able to do that, I have to hear many things. I have to see many things. Believe nothing you see and only half of what you hear. Your eyes will lie to you. So anyway, they would always have jokes about things. In 1948, there was a major conflict going on in the village because there was going to be a vote as to whether or not we should have a reservation. And one part of the population wanted the reservation. Another part said, no, if we're on reservation, we can't go to bars, liquor stores, all sorts of things like that. But anyway, there was a community meeting, a meeting of the whole town. And people were just about up in arms, just about ready to start break out in fights. And one of the elders walked in with this short white man, had a pinstripe suit on. I believe his name was Mr. Curry. Anyway, this old man brought him in. He called attention. Whoo, whoo, huck, huck. You know, he started hollering, yelling at them. And finally, it quietened down. He said, you folks, I think we should listen to Mr. Curry. After all, he's our liar. He was a lawyer. After all, he's our liar. And people started laughing. You know, they forgot about the fight going on because now their minds are hot again. Now they're listening again. They're thinking. And the military, U.S. military, they teach you, if I can make you angry or get you excited, I can beat you. Because the moment you start to react, to do that, you begin reacting. And so you actually dumb down. Your IQ takes a dive. Whereas I'm thinking, I'm responding. So I'm going to beat you because I can be three or four moves ahead of you while you're busy reacting to everything that's happening. One of my classmates in law school, we were very good close friends too. His name was Robert Fasthorse. And later he changed his name to his family name of Gray Eagle. Anyway, there was a meeting between the Pine Ridge and the Rosebud Lakota Sioux people. Sioux is a French word meaning the enemy. French asked the Pawnee, who are those people? He said, they're the enemy. So that's where they got the word Sioux. But anyway, there's Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota, and Assiniboine are the same people. But anyway, they were having a public meeting, you know, of the people from the two reservations, and it was getting pretty tense. About half hour into the meeting, this old man walked in from Rosebud, and he walked down the aisle, and he went about halfway, and there's a microphone right close by, and he just stood there. And Robert was chairing the meeting. So he said to the old man, is there something you wish to say? He said, yes. I want to apologize for being late. He said, I left my house with plenty of time so I wouldn't be embarrassing myself and insulting my host. So as I was driving here, I saw all these cars, so I pulled in there. I was there about half hour trying to find a place to park when I realized I was in a junkyard. You know, the whole phrase just cracked up laughing, you know, and it took all the tension right out of the room. You know? So we hear these things, and there's a real talent to doing those things. I worked for the U.S. Bureau of Indian Affairs in rights protection, and my boss was Flathead from Flathead Tribe in Montana, and or maybe Idaho. But anyway, she left on 30 days leave, and she came back. Woody, she said, I got to tell you about what happened. In her tribe, the women weren't permitted to vote in the tribal elections. And so there was quite a bit of controversy about this, and the women were demanding the right to vote. And she said they finally called everybody together for one big meeting to sort of hash out some of this stuff because it was really getting to be a real powder keg. And there was one old man, he would always sit sort of in the back and he'd listen. He didn't say anything. People noticed him, but he never said anything. Finally, when it reached the point where it was really about people to start punching each other, he got up and he slowly walked up to the microphone and the place went quiet. And he stood there and he looked around. He says, "You know, you folks," he says, "I've been listening. I've been watching. And if I understand right, I understand that the woman's just upset because the man hasn't given them what they want. Well," he says, "I have this big thing I want to lay on the table." You know, it's an obvious reference to possibly sex. And everybody started laughing. What he had was a proposition. You know, but the way he said it, you know, see, I get in trouble for that because I'll be thinking about something in Ida and somebody will say something to me and I'll respond inappropriately because I'm thinking differently. A woman came in my office, some time ago. She said, "I was hoping I'd find you in your office." I said, "Gee, I was just thinking about you." She's from another language, you know, she speaks Farsi. And anyway, she said, "What were you thinking?" And I said, "You don't want to know." And I saw her face get red, and then I realized I'd goofed. So I said, wait a minute. I said, "I wouldn't think in English." What I should have said was, asked you, "Why are you looking for a compliment?" You know, so these translations between languages, and that's why we call this program Language to Language. We're hoping we can get rid of some of these misunderstandings because that causes so many problems. I'm hard of hearing, so I don't always hear the right thing, too. My wife will say something to me, and I'll turn around and answer. Sometimes I'm upset or whatever, and she asks, what's wrong with you? I said, "Well, that's what I heard." She said, "I keep telling you there's not a darn thing wrong with your hearing. You just don't listen." So anyway, I'm glad there's somebody out there listening. I got a call a little bit ago. Somebody called to say, "Hey, I'm listening." And so thank you very much. I got to run. I didn't put enough money in that parking meter again. They're really strict about that. And my car's old and it doesn't take well to being towed. I got a 1994 Saab. They don't make them anymore. You know, Saab was sort of bought out by General Motors, and they changed the design, and nobody really wanted them, so they sold it to China. So China now owns Saab, but General Motors wouldn't sell the patents. So China's got the Saab, and I guess they're designing an electric car. So who knows, maybe I might get me a Saab 900 with electric motor in it. I don't know. That'd be a long extension cord all the way to China. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. In Haida, it means that I'm so thankful for you listening that my tongue doesn't have the words really to say how grateful I am that you listen. So anyway, like I said, I have a personal email, Haidaman, lowercase Haidaman at telus.net. So if you have any questions or comments, you know, just email me there. And if you do have questions that I don't have the answers for, I'll either tell you I don't know or I'll find somebody that does know. That's sort of my responsibility. In Haida, it said, knowledge is responsibility, not knowledge is power. Knowledge is responsibility. The person with the knowledge has to make it available. The person without it has to seek it, and when that person finds that knowledge, has responsibility of asking for it. The person with it can't offer it, because that's an insult to the other person. What I'm in essence, I'm saying I'm smarter than you are. I know what's best. But you have the responsibility to ask, and when you ask, the person with the knowledge can never say no. But depending on the age of the person with the knowledge, the answer will be slower and slower coming, because the person with the knowledge has to determine what is it this person really needs to know or want, you know, more than just what they want to know. You have to learn to pay attention, not attention, but intention. What does this person really mean? How much is this person going to be able to handle, and what is the best way in which I can convey this information? With my own son and daughter, I have never given them advice. When they ask for it, if you ask for advice, you have to take it, otherwise you're insulting me. If I offer it, I'm insulting you. So to avoid that brushing against each other, I always tell them a story. And in this story is information they can use to make a choice, but it doesn't tell them which way to go, because I want to respect their intelligence, but also spend a little bit of time at the beginning, when they were smaller, about how do you make choices, rather than just give me a 200 different kinds of cars and go pick one. How do you make a choice? But anyway, thank you so much for listening, and don't get out in the sun too much. There's quite a bit of possibility of skin cancer. I've been watching the stuff on the news, so protect yourself from the sun. And when you walk by a reflective surface, smile at yourself. Do it every time. And then after a while, you start seeing yourself as a smiling person. So thank you. Hawa. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Tune in to the Red Jam Slam Radio Festival in celebration of Aboriginal Week from June the 17th to June the 21st. The festival will be broadcast across Canada on 7 different stations.
Tune in to www.ckdu.ca or at 88.1 FM in Halifax, Nova Scotia. www.chuo.ca or at 89.1 FM in Ottawa, Ontario.
www.ckuw.ca or at 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
www.ckxu.ca or at 88.3 FM in Lethbridge, Alberta.
And in Vancouver, British Columbia, tune in to
www.cjsf.ca or at 90.1 FM.
www.coopradio.org or at 100.5 FM.
And www.citr.ca or at 101.9 FM.
This year, listen live from 1 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time from June the 17th to the 21st. Check out redjamslam.com.
Hello, hello, hello. CITR's punk rock radio show Rocket from Russia celebrates its super anniversary on June 20th at the Cobalt. The show features beautiful tunes by Fat Records recording geniuses Toy Guitar from San Francisco, two new local exciting acts, Uptights and Grease Thieves, plus special super guests to be announced soon. And Rush and Tim will also play a DJ set full of punk rock hits. We guarantee success at this event. Rocket from Russia anniversary, June 20th, Cobalt.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the 77th Annual Radio Relay Race.
That's right, Jim. Lots of great radio stations out on the track this morning, but my personal favorite is CITR. That baby's been going strong for close to 5 decades.
Astute observation as always, Bill, but I think the key is going to be passing the broadcast smoothly from the old sub to the new station in the nest.
Absolutely agree, Jim. Folks, you should tune in on Saturday, June 27th, and listen live to their first broadcast from the new station.
That was oddly direct, Bill.
You know how much I value clarity, Jim. The big changeover happens from 1 to 5 p.m. on the 27th.
Tune in then, folks.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Oh, hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for joining me today. And today we're going to be speaking about depression, but more specifically depression in men, because I guess apparently it manifests differently than in women. And I think part of the problem is that guys don't really talk too much about depression. And so today we are going to be speaking with Mark Goodwin. He's a native Vancouverite. He's a research assistant for Heads Up Guys, which is a project of the Men's Depression and Suicide Network. And Heads Up Guys is launching this week. It's a new website and new project. So we're going to be talking about that this hour. And Mark is currently a Master of Library and Information Studies student at UBC's iSchool and a student librarian at the UBC Library. His growing skill set and research interests are in information design, health information sources and services. This is wordy. Social media engagement and project management. Mark's interest in improving mental health started early in his academic career, and he works to challenge gender stereotypes. So we're going to be talking about all of that today. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be on here.
Cool. Thank you so much for joining us. And so I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about what got you interested in mental health and how did you connect with the Men's Depression and Suicide Network?
Right. Yeah. Well, when I started my master's, I guess I've just always been interested in mental health personally. Gender, kind of masculinity has always been something I've been interested in. I studied music, actually, in my undergrad, funny enough, and also English literature, and always kind of attracted to themes about masculinity and stuff. So I guess it was kind of an interest for me as I grew up and went through my studies and everything. And then the opportunity came along to be involved in the Men's Health Research Program here at UBC. This was before the development of the Men's Depression and Suicide Network. So I was working there under Dr. John Olive, who does research here at the School of Nursing. And then from there, we got funding for the project from Movember Canada, which was awesome. And I kind of one thing led to another, and I got put on the project, and it's been great. I've really enjoyed working on it.
Cool. Well, it's awesome that Movember is helping to fund the project.
Yeah, totally. They started out mostly doing prostate cancer stuff, and then just recently they branched out into doing mental health things as well. And yeah, they've been really, really great with getting funding out and starting programs and projects that are making a big difference.
Cool. So I actually forgot to say this is CITR 101.9 FM on unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. And you can also hear us at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network, or on my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/spiritualshow. So wherever you're listening from, thanks for being with us. Now, Mark, the Heads Up Guys, like it seems like the main part of the project is this big website.
Yeah.
Is it going to be headsupguys.com?
Or? Headsupguys.com, headsupguys.ca. Headsupguys.ca is kind of the main one, but we've got both URLs covered. So yeah, it's going to be launching this week. We've got a ton of